World War I, from Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia, http://en.wikipedia.org. The First World War, also known as the Great War, the War to End All Wars, and World War I, abbreviated WW1 after 1939, was a world conflict raging from July 1914 to the final armistice on November 11, 1918. The Allied powers, led by the British Empire, France, and Russia until March 1918, and the United States after 1917, defeated the Central powers, led by the German Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and the Ottoman Empire. The war caused the disintegration of four empires, the Austro-Hungarian, German, Ottoman, and Russian, as well as radical changes in European and Middle Eastern maps. The Allied powers before 1917 are often referred to as the Triple Entente, and the Central powers are sometimes referred to as the Triple Alliance. Much of the fighting in World War I took place along the Western Front, within a system of opposing manned trenches and fortifications separated by a, quote, no man's land, quote, running from the North Sea to the border of Switzerland. On the Eastern Front, the vast eastern plains and limited rail network prevented a trench warfare stalemate from developing, although the scale of the conflict was not as large. Hostilities also occurred on and under the sea and, for the first time, from air. More than 9 million soldiers died on the various battlefields, and nearly that many more in the participating countries' home fronts on account of food shortages and genocide committed under the cover of various civil wars and internal conflicts. Notably, more people died of the worldwide influenza outbreak at the end of the war and shortly after than died in the hostilities. The unsanitary conditions engendered by the war, severe overcrowding in barracks, wartime propaganda interfering with public health warnings, and migration of so many soldiers around the world helped the outbreak become a pandemic. Ultimately, World War I created a decisive break with the old world order that had emerged after the Napoleonic Wars, which was modified by the mid-19th century's nationalistic revolutions. The result of World War I would be important factors in the development of World War II, approximately 20 years later. Section 1. Causes. Main article, Causes of World War I. On 28 June 1914, Gavrilo Princip assassinated Archduke Franz Ferdinand, the heir to the Austrian throne in Sarajevo. Princip was a member of Young Bosnia, a group whose aims included the unification of the South Slavs and the independence from Austria. See also the Black Hand. The assassination in Sarajevo set into motion a series of fast-moving events that escalated into a full-scale war. However, the reasons behind the conflict are multiple and complex. Historians and political scientists have grappled with this question for nearly a century without reaching a consensus. Section 1.1. Sole responsibility of Germany and Austria. The, quote, official, quote, explanation appeared in Article 231 of the Treaty of Versailles in 1919, often referred to as the War Guilt Clause. The argument was based on the fact that Austria attacked Serbia on 29 July 1914, and Germany invaded Belgium on August 3, 1914. Thus, the Austro-Hungarian and German empires were the initial aggressors and therefore held responsible for the war. German academics such as Fritz Fischer, Emanuel Geis, Hans Ulrich Weller, and Wolfgang Mommsen and V. R. Bergen have all promoted this thesis in the post-World War II period. Fischer contended that Germany wanted to control most of Europe or, at the very least, unite it economically through Germany. However, as he points out, diplomatic efforts to do so had often centered around the Anglo-Germanic cooperation, not war. Section 1.2. Giant Accident. In the late 1920s and 30s, many people felt that the war was an accident that no one had foreseen or intended. In this interpretation, events had simply gotten out of control. This implied that something had to be done to prevent future accidental catastrophes. The nations involved in the war responded by setting up the League of Nations, signing the Kellogg-Briand Pact, passing neutrality acts, and engaging in appeasement to settle disputes. Section 1.3. Arms Races. The naval arms race between Germany and Great Britain was intensified by the 1906 launch of the HMS Dreadnought, a revolutionary ironclad battleship that rendered all previous battleships obsolete. Despite Britain's initial superiority as the first nation to exploit the new potential in naval technology, this event is often supposed to have ultimately weakened Britain's position relative to the other naval powers, as the new type of vessel annihilated the old status quo. Consequently, a major new naval arms race and shipbuilding developed, tying it with the concept of new imperialism, furthering the interests and alliances. Paul Kennedy has promulgated the thesis that both nations believed the command of the sea was vital to a great nation. Additionally, this concentration kept related industries active and unemployment down while minimizing internal strife through the focus on a common patriotic goal. David Stevenson described the armaments race as a, quote, self-reinforcing cycle of heightened military preparedness, quote, while David Herman viewed the shipbuilding rivalry as part of a general movement towards war. However, Neil Ferguson argues that Britain's ability to maintain an overall advantage signifies the change within this realm was insignificant and therefore not a factor in the movement towards war. Table. The naval strengths of the powers in 1914. Categorized. Country. Personnel. Large naval vessels. Tonnage. Russia. 54,000 personnel. 4 large naval vessels. Tonnage. 328,000. France. Personnel. 68,000. Large naval vessels, 10. Tonnage, 731,000. Britain. Personnel, 209,000. Large naval vessels, 29. Tonnage, 2.205 million. Total. Personnel, 331,000. Large naval vessels, 43. Tonnage, 3.264 million. Germany. Personnel, 79,000. Large naval vessels, 17. Tonnage, 1.019 million. Austria-Hungary. Personnel, 16,000. Large naval vessels, 3. Tonnage, 249,000. Total. Personnel, 95,000. Large naval vessels, 20. Tonnage, 1.268 million. Source, Ferguson, 1999, page 85. Section 1.4. Plans, distrust, and mobilization. Closely related is the thesis adopted by many political scientists that the war plans of Germany, France, and Russia automatically escalated the conflict. Fritz Fischer and his followers have emphasized the inherently aggressive nature of Germany's Schleicher Plan, which outlined German strategy if at war with both France and Russia. Conflict on two fronts meant that Germany had to eliminate one opponent quickly before taking on the other, relying on a strict timetable. Germany's strategy called for a strong right flank on the attack on Belgium and to conquer and crush French mobilizations to cripple the French army. After the attack, the German army would then be rushed to the Eastern Front through railroads and quickly destroy the slowly mobilizing military of Russia. However, things did not end up as planned, and early mistakes would cost Germany the war. France's well-defended border with Germany meant that an attack through Belgian and possibly Dutch territory was a necessity, creating a number of unexpected problems. In a greater context, France's own Plan 17 called for an offensive thrust into Germany's industrial Ruhr Valley, crippling Germany's ability to wage war. Russia's revised Plan 19 implied a mobilization of its armies against both Austria-Hungary and Germany. All three created an atmosphere where generals and planning staffs were anxious to take the initiative and seize decisive victories. Elaborate mobilization plans with precise timetables had been prepared. Once the mobilization orders were issued, it was understood by both generals and statesmen alike that there was little or no possibility of turning back or a key advantage would be sacrificed. Furthermore, the problem of communication in 1914 should not be underestimated. All nations still used telegraphy and ambassadors as the main form of communication, which resulted in delays from hours to even days. Section 1.5. Militarism and Autocracy. President of the United States Woodrow Wilson and other observers blamed the war on militarism. The idea was that aristocrats and military elites had too much control over Germany, Russia, and Austria, and the war was a consequence of their desire for military power and disdain for democracy. This was a theme that figured prominently in anti-German propaganda, which cast Kaiser Wilhelm II and Prussian military tradition in a negative light. Consequently, supporters of this theory called for the abdication of such rulers, the end of the aristocratic system, and the end of militarism, all of which justified American entry into the war once the Tsarist Russia dropped out of the Allied camp. Wilson hoped the League of Nations and universal disarmament would secure a lasting peace. He also acknowledged variations of militarism that, in his opinion, existed within the British and French political systems. Section 1.6. Economic Imperialism. Lenin famously asserted that the worldwide system of imperialism was responsible for the war. In this he drew upon the economic theories of English economist John A. Hobson, who had earlier predicted the outcome of economic imperialism where unlimited competition for expanding markets would lead to a global military conflict. This argument proved persuasive in the immediate wake of the war and assisted in the rise of Marxism and communism. Lenin made the argument that large banking interests and various capitalist imperialist powers had pulled the strings in the various governments and led them into war. Section 1.7. Nationalism and Romanticism. The civilian leaders of the European powers found themselves facing a wave of nationalist zeal that had been building across Europe for years as memories of war faded or were convoluted into a romantic fantasy that resonated in the public conscience. Frantic diplomatic efforts to mediate the Austrian-Serbian quarrel simply became irrelevant as public and elite opinion commonly demanded war to uphold national honor. The patriotic enthusiasm, unity, and ultimate euphoria that took hold during the spirit of 1914 was full of that very optimism regarding the post-war future. Also, the socialist democratic movement had begun to exert pressure on aristocrats throughout Europe, who optimistically hoped that victory would reunite their countries via the consolidation of their domestic hegemony. However, Lord Kitchener and Erich Ludendorff were among those who predicted that modern industrialized warfare would be a lengthy excursion. Others, such as Theobald von Bethmann-Hollweg, were concerned by the potential social consequences of war. International bond and financial markets entered severe crisis in late July and early August, reflecting worry about the financial consequences of war. Nevertheless, spurred on by propaganda and nationalist fervor, many eagerly joined the ranks in search of adventure. See also Recruitment into the British Army during World War I. Section 1.8. Culmination of European History. A localized war between Austria-Hungary and Serbia was made possible due to Austria-Hungary's deteriorating world position and the Pan-Slavic separatist movement in the Balkans. The expansion of such ethnic sentiments coincided with the growth of Serbia and the decline of the Ottoman Empire, as the latter had formerly held sway over much of the region. Imperial Russia also supported the Pan-Slavic movement, motivated by ethnic loyalties, dissatisfaction with Austria, dating back to the Crimean War, and a century-old dream of a warm water port. For Germany, their location in the center of Europe led to the decision for an active defense, culminating in the Schlieffen Plan. See also Powder Keg of Europe. Section 2. July Crisis and Declarations of War. After the assassination on June 28, 1914, Austria-Hungary waited for 3 weeks before deciding on a course of action, because most soldiers were on leave to help gather the harvest. On July 23, assured by unconditional support of the Germans should war break out, the Emperor sent the July ultimatum to Serbia, which demanded, among other things, that Austrian agents would be allowed to take part in the investigation, and that Serbia take responsibility for the assassination. Emboldened by the promise of Russian support, the Serbian government accepted all the terms, except that of participation of Austrian agents in the inquiry, which it saw as a violation of its sovereignty. Breaking diplomatic relations, the Austro-Hungarian Empire declared war on Serbia on July 28th and proceeded to bombard Belgrade on July 29th. On July 30th, Austria-Hungary and Russia both ordered general mobilization of their armies. The Germans, having pledged their support to Austria-Hungary, sent Russia an ultimatum on July 31st to stop mobilization within 12 hours. On August 1, with the ultimatum expired, the German ambassador to Russia formally declared war. On August 2, Germany occupied Luxembourg as a preliminary step to the invasion of Belgium and the Schlieffen Plan, which was rapidly going awry, as the Germans had not intended to be at war with the mobilized Russia this quickly. The same day, yet another ultimatum was delivered to Belgium, requesting free passage for the German army on the way to France. The Belgians refused. At the very last moment, the Kaiser Wilhelm II asked Moltke, the German Chief of General Staff, to cancel the invasion of France in the hope it would keep Britain out of the war. Moltke, horrified by the prospect of the utter ruin of the Schlieffen plan, refused on the grounds that it would be impossible to change the rail schedule. Quote, "Once settled, it cannot be altered." Quote. The question of whether such a radical change in Germany's plan would have indeed been possible was the subject of much dispute. When Moltke's reply was revealed after the war to General von Staub, Germany's chief of the railway division, he saw it as an affront to the capabilities of his unit and proceeded to write a book proving such a change was indeed possible. On August 3rd, Germany declared war on France and invaded Belgium on August 4th. This act, violating Belgian neutrality, to which Germany, France, and Britain were all committed to guarantee, prompted Britain, which had been neutral, to declare war on Germany on August 4th. Matthias Erzberger, the Reichstag deputy, later testified that 6 months after the outbreak of war, Moltke admitted that attacking France first was a mistake, and that, quote, "the larger part of our army ought to first have been sent to the east to smash the Russian steamroller," end quote.
Section 3. Opening Hostilities. Section 3.1. Europe. In Europe, the Central Powers, the German Empire and the Austro-Hungarian Empire, suffered from mutual miscommunication and lack of intelligence regarding the intention of each other's army. Germany had originally guaranteed to support Austria-Hungary's invasion of Serbia, but the practical interpretation of this differed. Austro-Hungarian leaders believed Germany would cover the north flank against Russia. Germany, however, had planned for Austria-Hungary to focus the majority of its troops on Russia while Germany dealt with France on the Western Front. This confusion forced the Austro-Hungarian army to split its troop concentrations. Somewhat more than half of the army went to fight the Russians on their border, and the remainder was allocated to invade and conquer Serbia. Section 3.2. Serbian Campaign. Main Article. Serbian Campaign. World War I. The Serbian army fought a defensive battle against the invading Austrian army, called the Battle of Sur, starting on August 12th. The Serbians occupied defensive positions on the south side of the Drina and the Save rivers. Over the next 2 weeks, Austrian attacks were thrown back with heavy losses. This marked the first major Allied victory of the war. Austrian expectations of a swift victory over Serbia were not realized, and as a result, Austria had to keep a very sizable force on the Serbian front, which weakened their armies facing Russia. Section 3.3. Germany in Belgium and France. After entering Belgian territory, the German army soon encountered resistance at a fortified Liège. Although the army as a whole continued to make rapid progress into France, the German invasion forced Britain's decision to intervene on the side of the Allies. As a signatory of the 1839 Treaty of London, Great Britain was committed to the preservation of a neutral and independent Belgium. In British eyes, the ports of Antwerp and Ostend were deemed too important to be possessed by a hostile continental power. Britain sent an army to France, the British Expeditionary Force, or BEF, which advanced into Belgium and slowed the Germans. The first British soldier killed in the war was John Parr on August 21, 1914, near Mons. Initially, the Germans had great successes in the Battle of the Frontiers, August 14, 1914 to August 24, 1914. However, Russia attacked in East Prussia and diverted German forces intended for the Western Front. Germany defeated Russia in a series of battles collectively known as the Second Battle of Tannenberg, August 17 through September 2. This diversion exacerbated problems of insufficient speed of advance from railheads not allowed for by Germany's general staff. Originally, the Schlieffen plan called for the right flank of the German advance to pass to the west of Paris. However, the capacity of rail and surface roads hampered the German supply train, allowing the French and British forces to finally halt the German advance east of Paris at the First Battle of the Marne, September 5th through the 12th, thereby denying the Central Powers a quick victory over France and forcing them to fight a war on two fronts. The German army had fought its way into a good defensive position inside France and had permanently incapacitated 230,000 more French and British troops than it had lost itself in the months of August and September. Its staff incompetence and leadership timidity, such as Moltke the Younger needlessly transferring troops from the right to protect Sedan, cost Germany the chance for an early victory over France with its very ambitious war plan. Section 3.4. Africa and Pacific. In August 1914, French and British Empire forces invaded the German protectorate of Togoland in West Africa. Shortly thereafter, on August 10th, German forces based on Southwest Africa attacked South Africa. New Zealand occupied German Samoa, later Western Samoa, on August 30th. On September 11th, the Australian Naval and Military Expeditionary Force landed on the island of Neu-Pommern, later New Britain, which formed part of German New Guinea. Japan seized Germany's Micronesian colonies in the German coaling port of Qingdao in the Chinese Shandong Peninsula. Within a few months, the Allied forces had seized all the German territories in the Pacific. Sporadic and fierce fighting, however, continued in East Africa for the remainder of the war, as German forces recruited native soldiers and evaded capture. Section 4. Early Stages. Section 4.1. Trench Warfare Begins. Main article, Western Front, World War I. Advances in military technology meant that defensive firepower outweighed offensive capabilities, making the war particularly murderous, as tactics had failed to keep up. Barbed wire was a significant hindrance to massed infantry advances. Artillery, now vastly more lethal than in the 1870s, coupled with machine guns, made crossing open ground a nightmarish prospect. Germans began using poison gas in 1915, and soon both sides were using gas. Neither side ever won a battle with gas, but it made life even more miserable in the trenches and became one of the most feared and longest-remembered horrors of the war. Unfortunately, few drastic changes in tactics could have been made even if the military leaders of the time were open to them. The war saw the invention of tanks as another attempt to break the trench warfare stalemate. They were primarily used by the British and French, though the Germans used captured Allied tanks and a small number of their own design. After the First Battle of the Marne, both Entente and German forces began a series of outflanking maneuvers to try to force the other to retreat in the so-called Race to the Sea. Britain and France soon found themselves facing entrenched German positions from Lorraine to Belgium's Flemish coast. Britain and France sought to take the offensive while Germany defended occupied territories. One consequence was that German trenches were much better constructed than those of their enemy. Anglo-French trenches were only intended to be temporary before their forces broke through German defenses. Some hoped to break the stalemate by utilizing science and technology. In April 1915, the Germans used chlorine gas for the first time, which opened a 6-kilometer, 4-mile-wide hole in the Allied lines when French colonial troops retreated from it. This breach was closed by Allied soldiers at the Second Battle of Ypres, where over 5,000 mainly Canadian soldiers were gassed to death, and the Third Battle of Ypres, where Canadian forces took the village of Passchendaele with the help of Allied powers. On July 1, 1916, the first day of the Battle of Somme, the British Army saw the bloodiest day in its history, suffering 57,470 casualties and 19,240 dead. 800 soldiers of the 1st Newfoundland Regiment went into battle at Beaumont-Hamel in France. The next day, only 68 men answered the regimental roll call. Like their British counterparts, the Battle of Beaumont-Hamel remained the bloodiest day in the history of Newfoundland until 1949, when it joined the Canadian Confederation. And as a result of their heroism, the 1st Newfoundland Regiment was dubbed, quote, the Royal Newfoundland Regiment, quote. Many historians agree that the Battle of Beaumont-Hamel contributed greatly to the identity of Newfoundland. Neither side proved able to deliver a decisive blow for the next 4 years. Though protracted German action at Verdun through 1916 and the Entente's failure at the Somme in the summer of 1916 brought the exhausted French army to the brink of collapse. Futile attempts at frontal assault, with rigid adherence to unimaginative maneuver, came at a high price for both the British and French poilu infantry, and led to widespread mutinies, especially during the time of the Nivelle Offensive in the spring of 1917. News of the Russian Revolution gave a new incentive to socialist sentiment among the troops, with its seemingly inherent promise of peace. Red flags were hoisted and the Internationals was sung on several occasions. At the height of the mutiny, 30,000 to 40,000 French soldiers participated. Throughout 1915 through 1917, the British Empire and France suffered far more casualties than Germany. However, while the Germans only mounted a single main offensive at Verdun, each failed attempt by the Entente to break through German lines was met with equally fierce German counteroffensive to recapture lost positions. Around 800,000 soldiers from the British Empire were on the Western Front at any one time. 1,000 battalions, each occupying a sector of the line from the North Sea to the Orne River, operated on a month-long four-stage rotation system unless an offensive was underway.
The front contained over 9,600 kilometers, 6,000 miles of trenches. Each battalion held its sector for about a week before moving back to support lines and then further back to reserve lines before a week of out of line, often in the Poperinghe or Amiens area. In the British-led Battle of Arras during the 1917 campaign, the only military success was the capture of Vimy Ridge by Canadian forces under Sir Arthur Currie and Julian Byng. It provided the British Allies with a great military advantage that had lasting impact on the war, and is considered by many historians as the founding myth of Canada.